We greet you in Jesus' name. What happens for you when the curtains of memory are rolled back? Several weeks ago, Emma and I had the privilege of visiting a good friend, Dr. Paul Stolzfus, in Oregon. His wife passed away in December. He was there, early 50s. And Paul is a licensed psychologist and is used to dealing with grief and difficult things in life. And it was good to be there with him. He said, "Dan, I had no idea it could hurt this much. I had no idea it would hurt this much," and he just, our visit pulled the curtains of memory back just a little bit for Paul. I talked to Paul this morning. I asked his permission to use his name in this service, and he said, "Of course you may use my name." Paul has many precious memories of his time with Jeanette. Paul lived with us for 4 years while he was doing his undergraduate work at a school in Fairfax. He had, as I was reflecting with Paul this morning, we talked about the fact that if you want to have a situation so that you don't have pain, when separation occurs, when losses occur, the way to do that is not have a healthy relationship in life. At a tremendous cost. But the closer the relationship is here on the earth, the more painful it is when separation comes and disappointments come. As I was sitting here this morning, I saw John sitting up here by himself, and I came up and sat with John, and we talked a little bit. We talked about memories, and John said, "Today is the 5th anniversary of my wife's wedding." John was married twice, for those of you that don't know John. And today is the anniversary of his second wife. And John, we as a group want to walk with you as you treasure those memories, and yet there are painful memories. There is probably not much in life that mixes joy and suffering together as much as some of those painful memories do. And in a group this size, there's many different issues as you pull the curtain of memory back. There's many different aspects, some relational, a lot of relational, a lot of other things that cause these memories to be painful or joyful. I suppose, in a sense, the difference between some memories is simply some focus on what we do not have and some focus on what we did have. I'd like to look at a few different aspects of memories this morning. God seems to work in themes in my life. I don't know how he orchestrates it. But at times, it seems I work with people, or people I'm working with are experiencing things. And lately, it's been memories. People have been asking, "Why do we have memories? Why, if I have forgiven something that happened in the past, I still think about it? I wish forgive and forget weren't used in the same sentence nearly as often as they are. Because if I walk by you and bump your shoe and say, 'I'm sorry, will you forgive me?' you will quickly say, 'Sure, I'll forgive you.' And by the time church is over, we will have forgotten that it happened. But few things in life are that simple, that we forgive and we don't struggle with memories. But I have discovered, I think, that as we forgive one another as we go through life, there's value in remembering. There's value in having memory. Not because we don't want to give up or forgive, but because we can forgive to deeper levels. I'm not the person today that I was yesterday. And as I reflect on some of these things, it gives me the opportunity to experience it to a deeper level. Grief is, I'm not sure if we can call that a memory. I think we can. Where we go through a painful loss, and what we go through as we experience that loss. There are happy memories. There are sad memories. There are horror memories. And some of these trigger, they're very sensitive, and they trigger a lot of anguish. There's in utero memories. Today there's even thought being given to the fact that before a baby is born, there may be things happening that the child doesn't cognitively at least remember, but there is at least an impact on the child. I'm reminded of a book that William Brackus wrote in the early 80s, Telling Yourself the Truth. So often, Brackus says that we would not consider telling a lie to someone else because you just don't do that. But we tell ourselves lies every day, time after time. There are some memories that are triggered by association. If I see a John Deere tractor going in the field somewhere, it may trigger a memory for someone. And yet, it would make no sense to have a reaction to a John Deere tractor unless we knew the person's life story. Allow me to use a story from a cow. My brother-in-law, Joe, sold his herd of cows. His wife is on a cancer journey. That's my sister, Dorcas. He sold his cows to a farm here in Lancaster. Now, Dan, where are you going with this? He sold his cows, and they stopped in to visit the cows. When Joe walked into the barn and the cows heard his voice, they reacted. Cows have memories, too. The cows weren't cowering in fear, but they were rejoicing because they heard the voice of their master or their previous master. Even cows have memories. I started looking at this subject some time ago and was fascinated by the amount of Old Testament scripture references that I found. In fact, I found about 1,000, give or take, depending how you count, Old Testament references, and 1,300 New Testament references to memories. Now, how you look at the root words and what you define, you could take me on that my numbers are off. But the important point I want to make is that memory is important in the scriptures. I'm going to read several verses. I'm going to go through them very quickly just to give you a sampling, a smattering of remembering in the scriptures. I just picked out a few, not specifically for what the memories are referring to, but the fact that it is an important aspect in the scriptures. Exodus 20, verses 8 to 10. I'll be using the New American Standard this morning. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all the work, but on the seventh day is the Sabbath day of the Lord your God. In it you shall not do any work, you or your sons or your daughters, your male or female servant, or your cattle, or your sojourner who stays with you. Remember the Sabbath day. Over and over throughout the scripture, remember. Leviticus 26:42. Then will I remember my covenant with Jacob, and I will remember also my covenant with Isaac, my covenant with Abraham as well, and I will remember the land. This is God talking about remembering. And that is, I think that's why it's such an important aspect in the scripture. Ecclesiastes 12:1. Remember your Creator in the days of youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near, when you might say, I have no delight in them. Let's jump to Exodus 3:13, verse 3. Remember this day in which you went out from Egypt, from the house of slavery, for by a powerful hand of the Lord brought you out of this place, and nothing leavened shall be eaten. The law is full of remembers. Deuteronomy 15:15. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you. Therefore I command you this today. Genesis 9:14. It shall come about that when I bring a cloud over the earth, that the bow will be seen in the clouds, and I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. And never again shall water become a flood to destroy all flesh. When the bow is in the cloud, then will I look upon it to remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth. In other words, God has a covenant. I knew that the rainbow was a covenant with his people, but I hadn't really paid attention that this was for every living creature on the earth. Joe's cows. God has a covenant that he would never send a flood again with all living creatures, not just with mankind. If God needs frequently to remember, certainly we need to frequently remember as well. Now, there's something that I would like to read from Joshua 4, the first few verses, and I'd like for the children to pay special attention to this one. I want to ask you some questions afterwards. I'll tell you the question now, and then we'll see if you hear me read the answer. My question is simply, why were they to build a pillar in the middle of a river? Joshua was told to have the people build a pillar in the middle of a river. Why? And I want a child under 10 to answer that. Listen as I read. Now when all the nation, that's the nation of Israel, had finished crossing the Jordan, the Lord spoke to Joshua, saying, take for yourselves 12 men from the people, one from each tribe, and command them, saying, take up for yourselves 12 stones, and from here out of the middle of Jordan, from the place where the priest's feet are standing firm, and carry them over with you, and lay them down in the lodging place where you will lodge tonight. So Joshua called the 12 men whom he had appointed from the sons of Israel, one man from each tribe, and Joshua said to them, cross again to the ark of the Lord your God in the middle of the Jordan, and you each shall take up a stone on his shoulder according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Israel. Let this be a sign among you, so that when your children ask later, saying, what do these stones mean to you? Then you shall say to them, because the waters of Jordan were cut off from the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, when it crossed the Jordan, the waters of Jordan were cut off, so the stones shall become a memorial to the sons of Israel forever. Thus the sons of Israel did as Joshua commanded, and took 12 stones from the middle of Jordan, Just as the Lord spoke to Joshua according to the number of tribes of the sons of Israel, and they carried them over with them to the lodging place and put them down. Joshua set up 12 stones in the middle of the Jordan at the place where the feet of the priests who carried the Ark of the Covenant were standing, and they are there to this day. What was the reason they were to put a pillar in the middle of the river? Someone under 10. It was to be a memorial? That's right. Thank you. It says that it was put there as a memorial, and it's to make children ask questions. Did you catch that? It's to make children ask questions. God told the leaders of Israel to do this offering or memorial arrangement in the middle of the river, and it says it's there to this day. Anyone interested in joining me as we go search for it? It is there, and it was specifically they were told to do it to make the next generation ask why. What's it there for? So that the values are passed on from one generation to the next. Remember, I'm fascinated as I think about the number of things that God told the children of Israel to do for the specific purpose of making people ask questions. Sometimes I think we don't do enough of that type of thing. I remember we had a friend in Virginia who used to say, if you want to sell drinks at a fundraiser, you just add some salt to the hamburgers and the drinks will sell. We need to add salt to life situation to make the next generation thirsty. And often we're so busy critiquing, that one generation is critiquing the other, that we're so busy with that we miss what this is all about. When the curtains of memory are pulled back, and we need to set up, I think he's suggesting, we set up scenarios that the curtains of memory get pulled back to stimulate. I love questions. I grew up on questions. My dad would ask us lots of questions. And there were times Dad would say, why is it such a big deal, one way or the other? Who's making it a big deal? I didn't like that. Because he was saying I was taking something out of proportion and making a big deal out of it. I think we need to be careful that in this memory process, this process of life, that we stimulate the next generation to ask questions. Instead of wish the questions would stop, let's generate questions. Let's generate dialogue. There's some important lessons we can learn from Peter, and I would like to read several passages, a few verses from each of the four Gospels about Peter and what happened when Peter remembered. I would like for you, this is scriptures you're all very familiar with. You hear the stories time after time. But what I'd like for us to pay attention to is how Peter remembered and the significance of his memory. Now Peter was sitting, this is from Matthew 26, starting at verse 69. Now Peter was sitting in the courtyard, and a servant girl came to him and said, you too were with Jesus, a Galilean. But he denied it before them all, saying, I do not know what you are talking about. When he had gone out to the gateway, another servant girl saw him and said to him who were there, to those who were there, this man was with Jesus of Nazareth. And again he denied it with an oath, I do not know the man. A little later, the bystanders came up and said to Peter, surely you are one of them, for even the way you talk gives you away. Then he began to curse and swear, I do not know the man. And immediately the rooster crowed. And Peter remembered the word which Jesus had spoken, before the rooster crows, you would deny me three times. He went out and wept bitterly. This is recorded in all four of the Gospels. I'm not sure if all four say that he went out and wept bitterly, but it is certainly conveyed. Sometimes when these memories are rolled back, especially if we goofed ourselves, we find there's nothing left to do but go out and weep bitterly. When Peter realized what he had done, just a few short hours before, he had said that if everyone else denies you, I won't. And I think he was very sincere. But when the curtains of memory were pulled back and he realized what he had done and what he had said, he went out and wept bitterly. Let's go to Mark 14. And Peter said to him, starting at verse 29, even though all may fall away, yet I will not. And Jesus said to him, truly I say to you, this very night, before the rooster crows twice, you yourself will deny me three times. But Peter kept saying insistently, even if I have to die with you, I will not deny you. And they all saying the same thing also. They came to a place named Gethsemane, and he said to his disciples, sit here until I have prayed. And he took with him Peter and James and John, and began to be distressed and troubled. And he said to them, my soul is deeply grieved to the point of death. Remain here and keep watch. And he went a little beyond them and fell to the ground and began to pray that if it were possible, the hour might pass him by. And he was saying, Abba, Father, all things are possible for you. Remove this cup from me, and yet not what I will, but what you will. And he came and found them sleeping and said to Simon, to Peter, Simon, are you asleep? Can you not keep watch for 1 hour? Keep watching and praying that you may not become into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. And again he went away and prayed, saying the same words. And again he came and found them sleeping, for their eyes were very heavy, for they did not know what to answer him. And he came the third time and said to them, are you still sleeping and resting? It is enough. The hour has come. Behold, the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. Get up, let's be going. Behold, the one who betrays me is at hand. Immediately, while he was still speaking, Judas, one of the 12, came up, accompanied by a crowd with swords and clubs, who were from the chief priests and scribes and elders. Here we have Jesus going with his disciples to the Garden of Gethsemane, and it seems they were all very tired, physically fatigued. And Jesus went on to pray, took Peter, James, and John with him, and they couldn't watch with him 1 hour, as Jesus said. They fell asleep on the job. Let's look what Luke says. A little later, Luke 22, starting at verse 58. A little later, another saw him and said, you are one of them too. But Peter said, man, I'm not. About an hour had passed. Another man began to insist, saying, certainly this man was also with him, for he is a Galilean too. But Peter said, man, I do not know what you're talking about. Immediately, while he was still speaking, a rooster crowed. The Lord turned and looked at Peter, and Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he told him, before a rooster crows today, you will deny me three times. What do you think that look looked like when Jesus looked at Peter? Have you ever experienced the Jesus look? When you didn't exactly want to be seen front and center by Jesus. Jesus turned and looked at Peter. And Peter remembered. Our children used to talk about the dad look. Depending what was going on, I guess you'll have to ask James about that. But there was something about the dad look. I think there was something about the Jesus look. I'm not so sure that it was so much about the Jesus look as it was Peter's response to the Jesus look. Because he recognized that he had goofed, that he made a major mistake. The look caused Peter to remember. It helped Peter to remember. How does the Jesus look affect you? Has it affected you? And that can be a signal when Peter didn't necessarily want to be seen by Jesus. Are there times in your life? Are there times in my life when I'm not too excited that Jesus is watching and giving me the look, as it were? There is opportunity to do something about it if we have trouble with the Jesus look, because we can take steps to correct that so that we can welcome the Jesus look instead of fear the Jesus look. Let's look at John 21 yet. John 21:20. Peter turned around, saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following them, the one who had also leaned back on his bosom at the supper, and said, "Lord, who is the one who betrays you?" So Peter, seeing him, said to Jesus, "Lord, what about this man?" Jesus said to him, "If I want him to remain until I come, what is that to you, Peter? You follow me." There are times when it's so easy to be so concerned about other people. I think Jesus just sort of cut through the stuff here and he said, "Peter, what's that to you? You follow me. What does it matter what John is doing?" A couple of verses later, John says that if everything were recorded that Jesus did, the whole world couldn't contain the books. So there's a lot of things that happened relative to Jesus that we don't have recorded. What reactions, what choices did Peter have when the Jesus look rolled back the curtains of memory for Peter? Certainly guilt and shame was one of the things that he... Another thing was that we read in the other Gospels that he went out and wept bitterly. And what God calls us as a church to do when people find that under the Jesus look they wilt and they go out and weep bitterly. That's where we as a church are called to walk with one another, to be there for one another. Instead of critiquing, to be there for one another, to walk with one another as one is weeping bitterly. How long do you think Peter remembered that Jesus look? Do you think it lasted a year? How long do you think it lasted? That when he reflected back on that time, I'll bet 50 years later, I don't think Peter lived that long, but beyond when this happened. But I expect for the rest of Peter's life, when he thought on this situation, when he read this account, he would remember the anguish and how bitterly he wept. But it's not hopeless, because just as Peter was able to find relief, so too can we. I'd like to Look at Psalms 103, verse 14. For he knows our frame. He is mindful that we are but dust. Did you catch that? We are but dust. And it says explicitly, for he knows our frame, and he's mindful of the fact that we are dust. When you are asked to do something, let's say you're asked to teach a Sunday school class, and you remember that some of the questions those students ask in that Sunday school class are pretty rough, and you think, well, someone else can teach better than I can, but what I would want to call to your attention is the fact, Alex, I was going to ask your permission to tell this story, and your dad told me, gave me permission. Is that okay? I went looking for you, and you were out parking cars. Thank you for being loyal to your duties. When you were asked to play Ben-Hur a number of weeks ago, did it feel like something that you would... This was at the before. Did you feel that this would be a great task? It just fits my longing? Not totally. Were there times that it felt like you weren't sure if you could make it? And what I want to point out is that how many people here were impacted by Alex's part in the play? He played Ben-Hur. How many were impacted? Did you see that? Thank you. But what we didn't see was the challenges that he faced in getting ready. But when Alex looked in the mirror in the morning and had a chat with Alex, one thing that I hope stuck and will stick in the future is that the one created you with the abilities you have remembered during that production that you are dust. On one hand, I say, great, you did a great job. On the other hand, I say, but you're dust. When God gives us an assignment, he remembers that we are dust. Isn't that great? He knows that we won't necessarily attain perfection and we won't always have it right. Kevin Greiner had staff devotions at Life Ministries a couple weeks ago, and he spoke about grace, and he made two quotes that I would like to share with you. My imperfections do not necessarily mess up God's plan, because if I don't get it right, and remember, he knows we're dust, he can still go on with his plan. But I think God says, okay, so we didn't get it right the first time. Let's try it again. And that's where it's so important that we tell ourselves the truth. I just want to say thank you to the entire youth group. I sort of picked out one to represent the group, but the fact that this was not a one-man production, this was a whole team. And if I have had the privilege of working with people over the years, and I know to get a team together, to work together like that, is not easy. It's not a reflection on you, it's just you're human. And God knows that this team was made up of people that are made of dust. Psalms 139. You formed my inward parts, starting at verse 13. You wove me in my mother's womb. I will give thanks to you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works, and my soul knows it well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was wrought in secret and skillfully wrought in the depths of the earth. Your eyes have seen my unformed substance, and in your book were all written the days were ordained, the days that were ordained for me, when as yet there was not one of them. How precious are your thoughts to me, O God! How vast is the sum of them! I wonder what it looks like if we could read God's book. Someday I'd like to be able to see that book on page. I expect there's a page there that says Dan Beachy. I'll make him a little over 5 feet. I'll place him in the Appalachian Mountains in western Pennsylvania for a good place to start off. I don't know what all God has in that book about each one, but I think each person here has a page, a blueprint. I don't know if it looks like a blueprint, a schematic, but something so that God remembers us by, as though he would need something to remember. Search me, O God. Psalms, this is just moving down to verse 23 and 24. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try my anxious thoughts and see if there be any harmful way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting. So God made us, God created us, gave us some abilities. And now with that understanding, the next time you're asked to do something that you'd just rather not do, like teach a class or sing a song or put on a Ben-Hur, talk to God about it. He was the one that created you. Moses tried it, and it. I'm fascinated that God didn't argue with Moses, but he didn't tell him that he was eloquent. When Moses said he isn't, God didn't argue with him. And then there's one final aspect that I would like to touch on. In 1 Corinthians 13, verse 11, when I was a child, I used to speak like a child, think like a child, reason like a child. When I became a man, I did away with childish things. Often when the curtain of memory is pulled back, we tend to look at things the way we saw them as a child. Let me illustrate. James and Carla's youngest one, Ashley, is 2. And let's suppose Ashley and I are going to take a walk around the pond in front of the building at Life Ministries. How long do you think it would take us to walk around that entire pond with her hanging onto my finger as we walk around? Well, I don't know how long it would take, but it would take quite a while, because Ashley would see things that she would want to chase after and splash in puddles if she could find any. And as we walk around the pond, she would be thinking of, wow, this is a big water. Now let's roll the clock out 40 years, 30 years. And the daughters of James and Carla are together for the first time for a while, and they're talking about, you remember when we went with Grandma to the place where Grandpa worked? And there was a huge body of water there. It was a mammoth body. And the girls talk and say, let's go see if we can find it. So they head off for Meadow Lane. And they get there and they find a little pond, a little decorative pond, but they can't find this huge ocean. Where is the huge body of water? The older girls say, well, it is sort of how I remember it. But Ashley would say, I don't remember it. Why? What is the difference? Ashley is looking at it through the eyes of a child and doesn't know it. That as an adult, she's still looking at it through the eyes of a child. It's one thing to do that with a pond. It's something else when we do it with relationships. When Ashley learns that the pond is actually much smaller than she thought when she looks at it through the eyes of an adult rather than a child, life makes more sense. And I think this is so fundamental that when we pull back the curtain of memory and we see what life looked like, that we make sure that we're looking at it through the eyes of an adult, not through the eyes of a child. That would make many relationships much more functional. In conclusion, what is it for you? My hunch is today I stirred a lot of memories as I shared with you, and the curtain got pulled back for you in different ways. For Brother John, today is a day that is both a joyful day and a sad day. And we want to walk with you, John, as you go through that. When the curtain of memory is pulled back for you, and it happens sometimes at the least expected time, the challenge is to look at these memories and choose to make them something positive. On Friday morning at Life Ministries, I heard a dear brother sing a song that I think would be appropriate to have him sing here this morning. Brother Mark Lisley spent most of his life in Dover, Delaware. Am I correct, Mark? Spent most of his life in Dover, Delaware, and is currently in Oregon. After Mark sang this song, I thought, I hope Mark can be here this morning to sing it. I'm not going to introduce the song, Mark. I want you to introduce the song and to dedicate it to the many hurting people in this audience. So, Mark?
I had no idea when I shared this song at Life Ministries that I would be here this morning sharing it, but I am glad that I have that opportunity. A little over 23 years ago, I have some memories that I'd like to share with you and end the song. I came home from work, stepped into the kitchen, and saw my little 18-month-old son on top of my five-year-old son in a wrestling match. And, of course, the five-year-old was on the bottom letting the 18-month-old win, and he was there plummeting him. They were having a great time. And I'll never forget when I opened the kitchen door and walked in, and he looked up and saw me, the 18-month-old son, Kevin, looked up and saw me. He left this little squeal out, jumped off of his brother, and came running over and threw his arms up, and I threw him up in the air and gave him his hug. I didn't have any idea that would probably be the last real memory I would have of associating with Kevin while he was alive, because I also have a memory of that later that night as we went to Bible school, vacation Bible school, hearing a call in the middle of Bible school that there was an accident and I needed to come right away. And the memory that I have of that is crying out to the Lord on the way to the accident scene and coming up to the scene and seeing my son's body beside the road while the neighbor was doing CPR. You understand, of course, the intense valley of sorrow that one goes through when that kind of thing happens. Part of the struggle for me was letting go, just letting go and letting Kevin go. And I guess we express our ways and our thoughts in different ways, and so I tried to put that down in a song. And you know, one of the things I appreciated the message about memory this morning. One of the things that that really spoke to me is how that memories give you longings for the future. And as I remember the fun, the good memories, and there were some times when even later on, as I was thinking about this, I would almost get panicky because I couldn't remember as much as I wanted to. But as I remembered the memories, it gives you a deep longing to meet that person that those memories are about. One more thing I wanted to share. I think it was the day after his death that we sat around the breakfast table. There was a high chair there, and it was empty. A gift straight from heaven, so innocent, so pure. You were a precious treasure. With you, we'd not be poor. Your zest, your joy of living was so easy to see. For 18 short months, we bounced you on our knee. And suddenly you were gone. The Father called you home. It didn't seem quite right for you to have to leave alone. So dear to us and so easy to love. But in our hearts we know you're happy up there in heaven above. So go ahead and join that great angel choir. Help lift the name of Jesus higher. So sad to have you gone, but we'll cherish all the memories till we meet around God's throne. A child's a gift from God, a sign of His great love. Each moment is to be enjoyed, each smile, each kiss, each hug. We thought we'd have a lifetime to love and care for you. Ah, but now you're celebrating up there beyond the blue. It's so empty and quiet where you used to sit. The memories make us miss you so. It still hurts, we will admit. But through the eyes of faith we see you as part of that great throng. Who's worshiping the great I Am. We know you're really at home. So go ahead and join that great angel choir. Help lift the name of Jesus higher. But we'll cherish all the memories till we meet around.